I recently stood at the edge of Utah's Great Salt Lake, where it's easy to imagine what the Earth looked like long before humans ever got here. It is a primordial place, flattened by wind and water. But decades of drought and overuse have pushed it to the brink.
My grandmother took me here, my whole life.
Darren Perry is former chairman of the Northwest Band of Shoshone. He says his ancestors have come to the shoreline for thousands of years.
My grandmother always talked about the water being sacred, and our people would come here to heal, just to come and catch your breath and enjoy what nature had to offer.
Which is what I'm feeling in a way right now, just sitting here.
Yeah.
I can breathe.
There's a feeling here.
Recently, the feeling has changed. Last year, the Great Salt Lake fell to its lowest level ever recorded, drying up almost 40% of the lake's surface area. As levels drop, the water becomes saltier, and the fragile food chain spasms. The tiny brine shrimp that flourish in the water die. The brine flies die, too. And about 10 million migratory birds that find refuge here have less to eat.
I have seen her, the lake, in the good times and the bad times. And right now, she's on life support. I feel helpless to do anything about it.
Perry came here to Antelope Island on the southeast edge of the lake with his friend, Bonnie Baxter.
I'm going to see if I see any shrimp.
Yeah.
Might be too cold for them yet, but in this part.
Baxter is a biologist and director of the Great Salt Lake Institute at Westminster University. She's crouching at the shore, pouring a thick soup of green algae through her fingers.
This is what you do.
This is what I do. Well, I collect samples here a lot, and then we examine them back in the lab.
Baxter is looking for changes in the lake. This year, she says the water has actually risen. Last winter, record-breaking storms buried Utah's mountains in snow. But when it melted this spring, the lake rose just a few feet.
It's a once-in-a-lifetime deposit of water into this lake. So do we really expect that to happen for another, like, 5 or 10 years in a row? No. No.
Climate change and drought are just part of the problem. Most of the water that would normally flow downstream to fill the lake is used up by farms. But people in cities are thirsty too, and so are their lawns. In 2020, Utah was the fastest growing state in the country. It is the defining problem of the West in the 21st century. We demand more water when there's less of it.
You put out a report earlier this year that said if something doesn't turn around fast,
right,
this lake could vanish,
right,
in 5 years.
Yes,
is
right.
It really that serious?
Well, we are sitting on the precipice of an ecosystem collapsing. And I just can't say it any other way. We are so close. You can feel it.
We know what failure looks like, and failure looks like a dying lake. We need to avoid it at all costs.
Brian Steed is the state's first ever commissioner of the Great Salt Lake. For the past 4 months or so, he's been coordinating Utah's response to the crisis.
Do you think the fact that you exist in this job is a sign of how serious the problem is?
I think without a doubt.
Steed says one thing that really got people's attention were the toxic dust storms. When the wind blows, dirt and heavy metals from the exposed lake bed are scattered across the Salt Lake Valley. In a race to reverse course, the State House recently approved a $40 million fund to restore the lake's shrinking wetlands. There's money to buy up water rights and a growing effort to help farms and cities conserve water. According to government surveys, Utah uses more water per capita than almost any other state in the country.
It's going to take all of us to fix.
Is there a point at which you would recommend the legislature force cuts to save the lake?
So we're a pretty conservative state. I don't know that.
But if it means saving the lake.
I don't think we're there yet. And I would say this. Utah certainly could have a tremendous amount of water savings through conservation. Mm-hmm. There was a time we grew here in the state where you could pretty well have an acre of Kentucky bluegrass around your house and we had sufficient water to meet that. We don't have that anymore.
You guys ready to go?
Yes, sir.
But it's not just cities and farms that use the lake. From the front seat of a helicopter, I'm about to get a seagull's view of an industry that's gotten a lot of attention lately from state regulators.
And we're off the ground.
Mineral extraction depletes about 8% of the lake's water supply, and in return pumps more than $1 billion a year into the state's economy. As we climb, executives from Compass Minerals direct my gaze to the lake below. huge ponds full of brine shimmer in the afternoon sunlight. When the water in these ponds evaporates, Compass can extract what's left behind. Salt, potassium, and magnesium. CEO Kevin Crutchfield says they've also had their eye on something else. Lithium.
Lithium demand is going to double between now and 2025. It's going to double again between 2025 and 2030.
In response to a global lithium boom, Compass has been building a plant to produce 11,000 metric tons of battery-grade lithium a year. Salty lakes are a prime source for the metal, and companies eager to meet the growing demand for electric vehicles have been looking for ways to extract it. The problem is most lithium is produced abroad, and mining it requires a lot of water. Crutchfield acknowledges the irony. A solution to decarbonize the economy could deepen the environmental disaster on the Great Salt Lake.
It's delicate, for sure. We get that. The lake is it's a treasure for the state of Utah, and we don't want to be the ones that are blamed for, you know, damage to the lake.
And Crutchfield says their methods wouldn't harm the lake. Compass would take the lithium out of the same evaporation ponds they're already using. In other words, it wouldn't take any more water. But with lithium prices at around $30,000 per ton, regulators worry that mineral companies will ramp up production. After all, Compass has the legal right to use far more water than they already do.
Is that something that you would envision happening, using more water as time goes on because the lithium business is good?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I would point out on the existing water right that we have, we've only used over the course of the last 5 years or so about 60% of that. But anything we do would be with an eye toward lake health, because at the end of the day, if we don't have a healthy lake, we don't have a business.
But state lawmakers like Republican Casey Snyder aren't convinced lithium producers would protect the lake without a set of rules. And it's not just Compass. Other companies want to extract lithium too.
We need to have policy controls in place so that we can ensure that people are telling us the truth.
So this year, he passed a bill that offers incentives to companies that don't use evaporation to produce their minerals. The law also requires companies to put water back into the lake if they exceed a certain threshold. Snyder says the race for lithium should not do more damage to a place that was sacred to his Mormon ancestors.
It's not worth it. I am of pioneer stock. My folks came here in wagons and handcarts and settled the hometown that I grew up in. And they came to their own new Dead Sea. And that's part of the reason that this was the place. And so without the Great Salt Lake, is it still the place? I would say it's not.
A week after Compass took me on a helicopter tour of its evaporation ponds, the company announced it was suspending its plan to take lithium from the lake. The state's new hurdles were too high to clear. But you won't hear Zach Frankel praising lawmakers.
The sun's come out now, so the birds are starting to get active.
On a late October morning, the head of the Utah Rivers Council is peering through binoculars on the Bear River Migratory Bird Refuge. The first big snow of the season has dusted the Wasatch Range.
That's very cold, but it's gorgeous.
The Bear River is the largest source of runoff for the Great Salt Lake, and Frankel has spent years trying to keep it flowing. As we're talking, a half dozen American white pelicans are feeding in front of us on the river.
I'm not being rained on anymore, so it's a good time to have breakfast.
They dip their heads under the water and emerge with a throat full of fish. Until recently, one of the largest colonies of white pelicans in North America raised its young on nearby Gunnison Island. But this year, with their home exposed to new dangers, 18,000 birds flew away and never came back.
It's no longer an island because it's all dried up, and so the coyotes and other predators are able to just run across the land and eat the baby pelicans.
What's that a sign of to you?
It's a sign of the potential end of the Great Salt Lake. The state of Utah's response to this crisis has been extremely feeble and peppered with all kinds of propaganda claiming they're solving the problem when they don't even have a handle on the magnitude of the challenge facing us.
Back on Antelope Island, Shoshone tribal member Darren Perry considers the magnitude of that challenge, saving a wild place that has too many hands trying to tame it. That sound you're hearing is Perry's modest offering, a bottle of water that he's pouring back into the lake.
What are you thinking?
I'm just thinking about when I was three, how this looked so much different than what it looks like today. And I'm not sure we're ever going to get back there. But I'm just hoping and praying that we'll start making decisions that will allow us to, my children and grandchildren, to have a quality of life here like I did.
Before he leaves, Perry shares with me a song that his grandmother taught him many years ago.
Hey, hey, Anna, hey, hi, Anna, hey, hey, Anna, hey,
It is a Shoshone prayer for the transformative powers of the water. Only now, it is the lake itself that needs healing.
Hey,